Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to another step on the leadership journey on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. And joining me, as he does every week, is our co-host for this series, Brian Kite. BK, week 8 around a lot of the country. Actually, tomorrow, state championships in Alaska. They're the first to get to the state championships. So we're winding down here. It's been a quick season.
Dang, you know, you talk about winding down, and I feel like we're just getting wound up. The competitor in me is just starting to get the juices flowing. So it's it happens every year. No football season is ever long enough when you're watching it. Some football seasons have been long enough, you know, when you're coaching or when you're playing. It's a different game when you're watching a football season. It always feels short, and then a lot of times when you're in it, you know, some of those seasons can actually feel pretty long. So excited to be here, excited to be back on another episode with you and to dive into approval today, talking about how we deal with not being trapped by the approval of others.
Yeah, it's, I think, a good topic here, BK. And I think back to, I think it was my third season, second school as a head coach back around 2004. And, you know, when you're a young coach like that, especially, approval is a good thing. I mean, you want, you know, basically everybody to approve of what you're doing, like what you're doing, et cetera. And I can think of a specific example that relates to it. It's kind of a funny story. And in week 10 of that particular season, we played our rival. That's actually where I live here now, in Avon Lake. My son plays for the Avon Lake team. So that's kind of ironic. That was our big rival forever. But in week 10, we played, and we were both 9-0, and they were loaded that year. They had some really good players who went on to the D1 level, one who spent a little time in the NFL. So really good teams. Theirs was a little bit more talent-laden. And in that week 10 game, we gave it everything we had, but it was over by the half. I think we were down 3 scores. We go into week 11. We win our first playoff game. We had some key injuries. We lost 3 of our linemen. 2 of them were All-State. We lost a starting receiver and defensive back. And we were doing all we could to get ready for that game and physically prepare. We were kind of depleted. So we were playing the exact same team again, playing Avon Lake again in week 12. And the team's playing really well. It's 7-0 at the half. And I remember, you know, we're playing. It was a big crowd. We're playing about in front of about 12,000 that game. And I'm walking, you know, behind the team to the locker room. And it's kind of silent on our side. And I hear somebody yell, "Hey, Grabowski, give him a chance in the second half." I was like, "Oh, wow." I thought we were in a good place right now. And I was like, "Dad, shut up." But it wasn't my dad. It sounded like something my dad might say. But, you know, that's one of those things, BK, like, you know, especially younger in our career, but even as it goes on, I think, and you and I talked about this before we got going, two places you could be really looking for approval, or being a guy that kind of says, to heck with it, I don't need anybody's approval. So two diverse things. And, you know, it's one of those things too. I think this does tie back to what we talked about before, things that take your energy. So too much time spent on those kinds of things definitely can derail you as a coach.
I had a conversation with a college coach, different sport, and this coach was telling me about one of their colleagues, and the colleague had coached at a non D1 level for a while, had a bunch of success, and then got a D1 job and had good success and actually went pretty far and competed for some championships. Didn't win a championship, but competed for some. And they were so frustrated by the pressure they felt about other people not being happy with them for not winning championships at the bigger D1 school. Even though they were performing and playing well. And they weren't being run out or anything like that. It was just, they just heard the voices, right? They heard the comments you know, as they do, and left the D1 job specifically because they didn't feel appreciated by the fans for winning and the D1 job, and went to a place where people liked them better. And didn't, you know, they didn't perform any better at, between the two levels. They performed about the same, just in the bigger D1 job, there was sort of just some more voices among the fans, you know, bigger fan bases and all that different stuff. And it struck me as really interesting because for me, like I heard that and I didn't think, oh, hey, that's good or bad. What I will say is it did strike me as I listened to that story about this coach's colleague. It struck me as that person is different than me, because that doesn't make sense to Brian Kite. That in my mind, for me, that puts too much value on other people's words. When for me, I hear that and the value is on how are we competing and how are we playing? And if we're playing well and we're competing for championships, whether the fans or, you know, some other group, you know, is talking or chirping or posting or tweeting is not where I place value. And I'm not upset with the fans, but it just struck me as, again, my interpretation, not a fact. So this is an opinion, not a truth. But it my opinion of that was that was a fragile mindset to have, because it put way too much value on opinions and approvals, and not enough value on what I think matters, and that is the quality of the work and winning or losing by. It was a separation for me. And so that I think that can be a tough thing, but I see increasingly maybe a little bit more like burnout, like you and I talked about recently. I do think that approval is one of the things that coaches don't talk about a lot, just like burnout. I actually think it's a huge contributor and oftentimes cause of burnout is this not having a healthy relationship with approval. And I'll tell you one of the ways that I see it, Keith. One of the ways that I see it. And that is how often I see a reactive defiance from coaches. I go back to this conversation you and I were having, boy, 2 or 3 years ago, when we were talking about the future of the game. And I can remember I was riding in an Uber. I think it was like 6 a.m., 5 a.m. You know, we're having a conversation. We were recording an episode. It was super early in the morning. It was dark outside. And we were talking about the game. And I warned coaches, do not build massive walls around your program to keep everybody out and all of their voices out, and think that you are somehow protecting yourself by building huge walls and thinking you need no one and you don't care about what anybody says, and this defiance approach to the game or for your program, because the people who are doing those things are going to just lob mortars over that wall. It's going to do more damage to you than anything else. And it's frankly a case study in people who are really hurt by not getting approval and who want approval. It's a case study that one of the reactionary things that people who are very affected by that do is they outright reject it in a defiant way, and they throw up a defense mechanism by trying to act tough. And I see it, coaches do this all the time, just like individuals do this in their personal lives. And so it's just one of those things that we are living in a world now where coaches, I think two things have happened. One, coaches are getting, there's just a lot more, coaches have vaulted to a position where they are on the same pedestal they've always been on, but they're a lot bigger targets than they used to be. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I think.
I mean, like, do you think that's a fair observation?
I think it's a very fair observation. I mean, they've always been in a position that they can be criticized. And it used to be, you know, at the coffee shop or the barber shop, and, you know, certainly Twitter and social media and all those different kinds of things has made it a lot easier to take those shots at them publicly. So I think it's been amplified, certainly.
That's what I think has happened. I think one, coaches have been vaulted to a spot where they're still on the same pedestal as they were, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago. But like when I played high school football in the 90s, people who wanted to criticize any coach or beyond them just criticize but have an opinion on anything that coach did, it was just conversations. That was it. That was the only place you could do it, was in conversations. And so that pedal still existed, but the coach wasn't as big of a target back then as a coach is now, because there weren't as many avenues to share those opinions about the coach. Now these avenues where you get to see and hear and read and spread what people think about you is way bigger now. And so that's the second thing. The second thing is coaches are seeing and experiencing an exponential increase in actually experiencing what people think about them than compared to even in the 90s. And that's we haven't spoken about that and talked about that a whole lot between media coverage, social media, television, all the different places. Coaches are getting exposed to what people think about them 24/7 compared to, even 20 years ago. And so there's a big learning curve with being that exposed on that big of a pedestal, because you are a bigger target and you're seeing a lot more about what people think about you.
When we look at this topic, Brian, I'm sure, we're going to get to this a little bit later, but we kind of mentioned two distinctly different things there. The coach who is giving his energy to trying to do everything to get that approval, and the coach who's being defiant to it. And, my feeling is you got to find some balance with that. You really can't be on either end of that continuum. And you almost have to be a little bit strategic about how you set your program up, how you set communication up, how you deal with your stakeholders, all of them, in order to, I think, have a feeling of, some peace of mind in that you're doing the right things, and that, yes, I'm going to have these people who are going to be detractors. I'm going to have people who really like me, but I can't really get caught up in either of those groups and in either of those things. So it's not shutting yourself off and becoming defiant, but at the same time, it's not being a hound for that approval either.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, let's look at it a couple different ways, right? Let's step away from football for a second. And, I think the first thing to recognize, and if you read the daily discipline messages that I emails that I write each morning, that this was the topic that I talked about recently all week, actually. And I think the first piece to understand is this, is that getting the approval of others doesn't actually deliver value. Probably the biggest misunderstanding in this entire topic is thinking that somehow getting other people to approve of you. Approval comes through a lot of different ways. There's a lot of different ways it looks, but the broad notion of getting other people to approve of you. I'm not talking about like you. I mean, look, I can like a person and not approve of them. I mean, I think, anybody who has friends knows that, I like a friend, but I don't necessarily approve of all the things that they do. And so approval is whether, I like what you're doing. I agree with what you're doing and I want you to do more of it. And, hey, keep doing it just like that. I approve of how that goes. If you're married, seeking approval in a marriage is a huge thing. A lot of people who are people pleasers struggle with this, and they struggle with it in their very close relationships. But we've got to understand that getting the approval of other people, it doesn't actually deliver value, because what do we think happens when we get approval? And let's check this against what do we think happens when we are outright defiant of approval. Well, both of them are overly attached to what it is that somebody else's opinion does, Keith. This is why being in any way chasing of approval is not advisable, and why being defiant of approval isn't advisable, because they're both reactionary to other people's opinions, which don't actually affect how you do your work. It's wasted energy. Because if you've heard me do a keynote before, you might have heard me say this. I cultivate a mindset that I learned how to do it when I was doing keynotes or speaking to audiences. And I started realizing it about myself because it came naturally to me in some part, but I didn't have it's kind of like one of those things where you can do something and then somebody asks you how you do it and you try to explain it, but you can't because it's kind of something you did naturally. Right. Like a lot of players who are good at the game, sometimes when they become coaches, they realize, oh, shoot, I can play the game and do this. But if you ask me to teach it to somebody else, I'm not that good at teaching it. I just knew how to do it. That's how this part worked for me. So here's the mindset that as I actually started gaining self-awareness and being more strategic about it, here's how I thought about it. I still think about it. If I don't get your approval, my life was okay before. For all of the years I've been alive, my life was okay without your approval before you denied it. And my life will continue to be okay if you don't give it to me now. I've been alive for 37 years. If you, Keith, don't give me your approval about something that I do, well, I made it my whole life to this point without your approval. So what does it matter to me and the decisions I make and how I go about my life if you don't give it to me now today? It doesn't affect me in the slightest. Now, that doesn't mean that I look at you and I say, you have no impact on me and I don't care about you at all, Keith. Because even that is reactionary to you know, being upset or having to somehow justify or rationalize or defend, you know, why your approval was never important. It's just this. It's recognizing that you giving me your approval or you denying me your approval, neither one of those affects my decision-making capacity, my responsibility, my ownership of my attitude, of my action, and of my words. Both of those reactions by me are placing responsibility and too much authority onto you, as opposed to putting responsibility and authority onto the only one who has it for me, and that is me. Does that relationship make sense between how both of those are reactionary?
Yes, and you know, heading back to some things we talked about before, they both take energy, right? It takes a lot of energy to be dealing with both sides of that. I know we'll get to it, but I know there's a better thing that we can focus on rather than approval.
Yeah. I guess it ultimately comes back, you know, when you talk about the balance, you know, I struggle with the word balance sometimes. Somebody asked me the other day about, you know, balance and work life. I struggle with balance because I think most people hear the word balance and they think about doing both. Right? They think about sometimes this, sometimes that. And that's dangerous because you yo-yo. It's like, well, sometimes, you know, sometimes you need to go to the approval and sometimes defy the approval. And if that's how you think of balance, I would encourage you to scrap that and, you know, come up with a more appropriate or a more effective way of balance. And it's not, you know, putting it right in the middle so that it's neither one of those. It's actually understanding the relationship. Gaining or losing approval has no impact on who you actually are, and it has no control over who you choose to be. It's a false pursuit. It's a false pursuit. The second big thing, again, talk about that this week, is and coaches don't do this as much, but every coach is also a person, and this exists. A lot of times people go after approval because they want to alleviate tension in a relationship. And there's this innate emotional desire in humans to escape a relational tension. I also think other times coaches unnecessarily create relational tension by doing this defiant move And so don't create unnecessary tension, but also don't worry about alleviating tension if somebody doesn't approve. It's okay. And I go back where again, I look at somebody who I think does this particularly well, and we've talked about this a bunch of times. And, you know, I think Saban does this probably pretty well, but I think the case study for who does this well is Bill Belichick. And it's obvious to me that when he gets in front of media, again, you look at the difference between how he acts around media and how he acts around people, is he puts a certain value on media. And you can see he's not defiant to media. He's never upset about media. He doesn't put emotional energy into media because he's made a decision about what value media plays to him and to his institution. And it's zero. It's none. So that's why you see it's like this. It's like he's an empty vessel when he's in front of the media. There is no reactivity there. And then you compare that to a lot of other coaches, and you see they get mad at reporters' questions. They get upset. You know, I saw D'Antonio the other day, who is a good guy, and he got super upset at – I say super upset, that's my interpretation. He got upset at a reporter's question who asked him about, you know, was it a mistake to not overhaul the offensive staff? And you could see he got reactive to the question. He was upset that reporter asked that question and was spreading that information. And again, in my observation, it's just putting value on, you know, one, I think that's a fair question by a reporter who's going to write it. I just don't put any value in what a reporter writes. It's a fair question if you're a reporter and you're covering the team. But if I'm a coach, covering that team is, you know, what that person is writing in the current – doesn't matter to me. We're just trying to win games and build a good offense. I may or may not have made a mistake, but what you think is not relevant. You write in a newspaper and for a website, zero relevance. So I think sometimes we create too much tension through the defiant approach, and other times we try to alleviate tension by gaining approval. You know, and that has both relational and coaching applications. Have you seen those two things happen yourself? Have you been able to observe that in your professional or in your personal life?
Yeah, I think you see it more often than not today. And again, people get attacked personally, you know, by their friends or people they know or whatever, you know, on social media, on Facebook or whatever. I mean, it's somewhat entertaining at times to look at that, but it's a big waste of time when you think about it. And, you know, again, I think the word I used before was kind of balance, but my thought, you know, being balanced in as far as not really being affected by either side of that feeling of I need to search out approval, or feeling that I need to be defiant. And, you know, in reading your series this week, I mean, the big word that really stuck with me and, you know, really goes into the system for this, which we always talk about, the E plus R equals O, but the word standards, right? Standards are what's going to help you in this whole discussion of approval.
Yeah, when you know your standards and you have done enough work to live your standards, that's what you answer to. You answer to your standards. And when you've done enough work, here's how you know you've gotten to the place you need to be at and cultivate. And that is when you are living your standards and working hard to live your standards. And you'll never live them at the total level you want to be living them at all times. And so you're always working to live at your standards. I am always working to live at my standards, and I'm working to increase and be better at my standards. Anybody could come into my life right now and quickly and easily point out areas where I am simply not up to standard on things that I teach, things that I live, things that I'm trying to do, you know, ways that I interact with people. It would not take you long to come into my life personally and professionally, and find BAPS. It just wouldn't. What I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure that I'm aware of that. I'm not going to be defensive. And I'm also not going to be upset or irritated that you pointed out where those gaps are, because I don't answer to your opinion. I already knew that about my life. I already know it right now. So you pointing it out doesn't bother me, because I answer to my standards. I've worked hard to cultivate them. I've worked hard to develop them. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to say this. If you point out a gap in my standards and I see that also, I'm going to say to myself, I'm going to say, yeah, absolutely. Or I might say it to you as well. If you point out a gap in my standards that I didn't see before, I'd say, boy, you're right. Thank you. If you point out a gap in my standards, but it's really not a gap in my standards, it's just you think it is, or it's a gap in your standards, but I don't share your standards, I'll say, okay, great. Good for you. And I'll move on. So you can go live your standards, but you don't get to bring your standards and apply them onto me and then have me apologize for living them. So everybody has to do this work of identifying the standards that you live, committing to them, because eventually people are going to approve or disapprove of you no matter what you do. And I think one of the dangerous pieces is when, and this is maybe a whole separate topic, one of the really dangerous pieces historically is when a lot of people are approving of you, but you're not really living your standards. And that's why approval is such a false pursuit. I mean, you look at what does fame do to people? Fame, and this is for people who are famous, really famous, why they feel so alone a lot of times, is because to the outside world, they have all this approval, right? They have streaming fans, huge audiences, everybody loves them. They're big on social media now, all this different stuff. And then if you get into their life and you figure out what's going on, they're falling apart. They feel alone. They feel empty. They're not actually living standards that they've actually worked out. And they feel like they are a slave to the approval of other people. I've even heard, I don't agree with how he does it, but I've even heard BJ. I've heard Odell Beckham Jr. talk about how he feels trapped by the desire to constantly perform across social media. And I don't think there's anybody who tries harder on social media than OBJ. I mean, you know, he it's a weak claim, in my opinion, to feel trapped on social media when you post as much trying to get and chase likes as he does, and you try to be this big performer who is constantly doing all these things on all these different places. Heck of an athlete and can play the game of football, obviously, incredibly well, but it's not fulfilling to him to get the approval of everybody. It turns out choosing approval and being this huge star and athlete who posts all these videos dancing and is a star on Instagram, it turns out it's not really a fulfilling approach. Just like if you defy everybody's approval, it's going to wall you off. If you chase everybody's approval, it's going to wall you off too, because you know you're just – doing it to be liked, and it's not because it's who you actually are. And you ultimately, whether you wall off and defy because you don't know your standards and you're reacting to everybody else and their opinion, or you are chasing and you're trying to get that, hey, I just want everybody to feel good about what's going on and like, you know, give me a chance and, you know, like come with me and like me and be with me here on this. Both of them are empty because they both make you feel alone, because both of them are inauthentic and they're not pursuit of your standards. They're pursuit of trying to get somebody else to do or understand something. And that is for them, not for you. So looking at what we need to do is we need to identify what our standards are. That's our ultimate commitment. That's our ultimate commitment, whether people approve of them or not. It's to make sure that the only reference point is, are you living your standards? That's the reference point. You know, I've got that in my marriage. My reference point is, am I living my standards? And if my wife points something out to me, my first question is, if she's like, hey, you know, I didn't like this, or hey, you know, I'm frustrated, or hey, you know, like you did this and I'm irritated, all the different things that happen in a relationship. My very first question is, look at my behavior. Did I uphold my standards? That's my first question. And there's times where she points something out and I look at my behavior, I look at my attitude, I look at what I did, and I say, no, that was not my standards. That was, I fell below my standard. And the first thing I do is I own it myself. I forgive myself. I apologize to my wife. And I go, that doesn't matter. Get better mindset. The next thing I could do is if my wife points something out and I say, hey, was that my standards? There's times where I'm living my standards and my wife doesn't share that standard with me and it irritates her. In which case, I have to stay committed to my standards and I have to recognize that not everybody is going to like every standard that I set for myself or for my family or for whatever. And sometimes that could even apply to my wife. That's how real this is, Keith. It's that real. Because there's no way. I love my wife. We're different people. There's no way every standard I hold and every standard she holds, we're going to like every one of them together. There's no way. So I've got to secure my standards and I've got to secure my identity, not just with my professional life, but even in my personal life, across friendships, relationships, marriage, parents, siblings, family. I mean, this goes obviously super, super deep, super deep.
BK, and I know this could go down a rabbit hole, so I'm not looking to do that because this is probably a topic for a different discussion. But as we look at standards, I know you've had the opportunity to go into a lot of organizations, some very elite organizations, and help them get some clarity on things. How much time, and again, kind of trying to emphasize the importance of this idea of standards, how much time do you spend as you're going through and taking them through and installing your systems? Do you guys really spend on getting clarity on what those standards are, you know, whether that's in their program and their company and their organization and their position group, whatever it might be? You know, how much time is really spent on getting clarity on that? Because I don't think it's, I think that's actually a very useful exercise that everybody who's, you know, if you're working with people, you have to have standards, right? I mean, that very few of us have a job where we don't work with people and we aren't part of a team. But in that regard, BK, that the emphasis on that part, how important is that to the success of those elite organizations?
It's huge. It's massive. And full disclosure, Keith, not many do it well. Not many do it well. And ironically, do you know why not many do it well?
I'm interested.
It's because when they're choosing standards, too often they choose standards that they think everyone will approve of, or at least the majority will approve of. And they copy or borrow or replicate or mimic or parrot standards that almost everybody else uses or that they think would really have the most spread across the community or the organization. They don't choose standards based on identity, based on the principle and character makeup, like they're crafting something from a large slab of marble, and they said, what is the strongest, most secure, most resilient set of principles and practices, behaviors, mindsets that we can craft here that build the team, not just that we want, but that we need, for the organization that we want, that we need, required to do the work that we're talking, for all the big talk that we do, all the, you know, again, I'm on the record about this, but for all the tough guys on Twitter who are, you know, big talk, you know, like whether you're a gazelle or you're a cheetah, you better, every day you wake up, you better be running, you know, all this stuff that people put on Twitter. And then you get them into setting your standards and you watch what happens and people start getting afraid of saying something with a stake in the ground that would upset or irritate or rub half the people that might see it the wrong way. Or they worry that if they say something too strongly that some people might disagree with it. Or if they use a certain word that somebody might not like it. I had a guy the other day in my daily discipline, I used the word damn in my daily discipline. And I think I said like damn straight, or, you know, you got to do it any damn way you want. I don't know, something like that. And I had a guy who wrote back and he was very upset with me for using the word damn in my email. And okay, I don't have a problem with it. It's okay. So I see people doing this, Keith. I see organizations doing this, teams. And the thing I see more often than not is the behavior that guides how people are choosing standards is they try to choose standards that they're looking at the team and they're like, they want to choose a standard that everybody here will buy into. That's not how you choose standards. That's not how, like, my wife and I recently just had our second kid. I've got two kids now, a son and a daughter. I'm not ever going to look at my kids and decide on the standards for my family and raising them based on what I think they'll buy into. It's a ridiculous notion for raising children. What do I think my kids would buy into? Let me choose those principles for my family. No, I'm going to choose the standards I believe in. And then I'm going to raise my kids according to the standards that I believe in. And then when they're old enough, they can decide whether those standards are for them. And if they continue living them, great. If they choose different standards, awesome. When they're able to make their own decisions and they start building their own lives, they can choose whatever standards they want. And so if we're leading a team, we're leading an organization, choose the standards that you want to live. Choose the standards the organization needs. Choose the standards that you are ready to forego other people's opinions on, because the standards you're picking are the standards that you actually believe in, not the standards that you think people would approve of or everybody would like, or you wouldn't catch any flack from, or some group out there who wants to get offended at everything or something silly is going to come back and be upset with you for. Everybody's afraid of offending people. If you choose a standard, look, if you choose a standard that treats other people poorly and you marginalize and decredentialize somebody as a human being for something, okay, well, then you deserve criticism. And I would just rather people just own that. We're not talking about that here. We're talking about people who are good individuals choosing, you know, good standards and then wanting to, like, choose good standards but not ever get criticized. Choose a standard. Let people criticize it. It's okay. There's a lot of people in the world, Keith, who don't like what I do or how I do or how I say it. That's all right. There's a lot of people who've never met me, who, if they did, or never heard of me, never seen me, if they did, would very much oppose what I stand for. That's okay. I stand for what I stand for. I'm just not what they're good people. They just want to live differently than I do. That's fine by them. I'm going to live this way. I'm going to build it this way. That's what I want to contribute to. And I'm looking for people who want to build lives that way and who I can help and contribute to. That's why I love doing these podcasts with you. I'm sure there's people who listen to this who are like, I don't know about that. That's okay. So build it that way in the organization. That's don't copy, don't mimic.
We're guilty of that as coaches. I mean, you and I have talked about this quite a bit. We're you know, a few months away from heading back out and listening to each other talk about what works for our program, or, you know, go and see this popular coach who's had success and they're going to say this is what we did, or going to throw a big concept out there, not give you the details maybe behind it, or say something as a quote you wrote down in your notebook. And, you know, it's inspiring in a way, but if it doesn't move beyond that, if it doesn't become a standard for behavior, if it doesn't become a core belief with those standards for behavior behind it, while you might find it inspiring, it's not going to consistently drive your actions. In other words, it's not going to have a lot of value. It's not going to get your program anywhere. It may look cool. You actually may have the approval of people who say, yeah, they're doing it over there. That's the way to do it. But at the core of this is we want results. We, you know, you and I talked about we're rolling into the final part of the regular season. For a lot of people, they want that to be just the beginning. You know, how do we get there? Well, we're going to have some high standards and have worked at that all off season long so that we've honed all the skills behind that. And we're ready to step into that next phase, or as people like to call it, the second season, right? The playoffs, and try to go far there.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you said it, I think you said it right. It's, we can get inspired by something, which is good. I mean, inspiration is a real human experience. We just need to make sure that we're returning back to what standards we are choosing. And that's just a really personal process. And the act of leading is finding out what that personal internal drive is, and then bringing it to our work, to our tasks, and to the people that we lead, and recognizing again, no matter how good you are, and no matter how good other people are, they're not going to agree with every standard that you set. Good people will have different standards than you. It's okay. Live yours. They'll live theirs. If you can point in the same direction and align, great. They don't have to conflict. That's true for you and me, Keith. You and I don't have the same standard on everything. It doesn't mean that you are going to conflict. It just means that if I see a standard where you hold it different, it's great. Like, for example, Keith, you might be an airport runner. You might think it's okay to run in an airport. I don't, ever. And so if you run in an airport and I'm with you, I'm going to walk. And I'm going to look at you and I'm going to think that you look ridiculous. That doesn't mean you should walk because I say so. I want you to walk in the airport because you believe it's the right thing to do.
BK, I would say I'd stand beside you on that one. However, when
oh,
yeah, but when we got
the,
to the escalator, I'm taking that bad boy.
Okay. All right. Like that's the big, every time I talk about airport running, because I, for those of you who don't know, I never run in an airport. I don't believe anyone should ever run in an airport because I've never seen somebody run in an airport and maintain their dignity. You're not going to get to your flight because you run, just walk. It's not going to make a difference. My wife fundamentally disagrees with me. She thinks it's ridiculous. And we do not have the same standard on that one, and that's okay. We do have the same standard about stairs, but apparently that's where you and I are going to differ, Keith. And so that's okay. You know what?
My knee's getting better now.
We're both going up, or we're both going down. As long as we're both going in the same direction, you can ride that escalator all day long.
That's right. Well, my knee is in better shape, BK. You know, I've started that running program and I'm going strong. I think I'm into today's the last run in week 6. I've been strong for 18 out of 18 when I hit this one today. That's the standard I set for myself. You and I talked about this before we got going in the season.
Yeah.
So I got that going. But I can't say there's been times in an airport where if I would have maybe not run, but picked up the pace a little bit, you know, Chicago is always a nightmare for me. I can remember a recruiting trip that I spent two full nights in Chicago because we missed the United door. But that's a story for another time. But the standards are so important. I am more now leaning towards being able to go upstairs. I'm driven by my Apple Watch. I love the analytics on it. So more steps I can get, the better.
Attaboy. Well, look, I think this conversation we had today was important. I think also that what I would encourage everybody who's come this far in the episode to do is don't hustle past this topic for yourself. Do not think that you are above thinking about and working on how you interact with people around their approval, and taking the time to understand yourself and reorient yourself when it comes to approval whether you are overly attached to it or overly defiant of it. It is worthy time, if nothing else, than to sharpen and strengthen your confidence in your standard. If you don't feel like you're out of whack, okay. But use time on this topic. Like go into yourself. Do reflective self-awareness on this. It is time well spent, no matter who you are or where you are in your journey.
BK, this was kind of an exciting one. I've been reading the Daily Discipline every day this week, and this thematically, at least, is, I think, been the first time where we actually we're focused on what you talked about all week long. We've mentioned certain things here and there. We always talk about things that come up on the Daily Discipline, but that was the theme this week for four of your daily disciplines. And I think it's such just a great tool for you really reflect and start to understand more about yourself and, you know, what you want to do, need to do as a person who's looking for excellence and wants to help both yourself and others. How can our listeners get the Daily Discipline?
Put your name and email in. It's free at dailydiscipline.com. As soon as you sign up, you will get it the next morning at 6 a.m. and every weekday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern time. The messages are short, brief. The text usually fits from start to finish on phone screen with no scroll. So they are quick reads. Let me see if I can read a I'm going to find an actual what somebody said today. It made me laugh because just how people are how people see it. I love it. He said, I appreciate your bluntness and ability to cut through the BS fluff and put the truth out there. So thank you, Mike, for valuing what you call blunt, cutting through BS fluff and putting the truth out there, because I try to be simple, I try to be direct, and I try to add as much value as I possibly can in these emails.
And for the listeners who get more and more into BK's content, I think you're going to see really quick, this is all about having a system, and it's something that BK has spent a lot of time developing. Continue to watch his emails for more of that stuff. Right now, you'll find a lot of that in the Daily Discipline. And if you're looking for systems on the X and O side of things or on the technique side of things, check out the systems we put together at footballdevelopment.com for blocking, tackling, and defeating blocks. I know that's an important part of your program, and there's some great stuff in there for you right now. Even though we're heading towards the end of the season, a lot of this stuff can be implemented, used to improve your team now, and can continue on through the offseason. So check out those systems as well at footballdevelopment.com. BK, as always, I appreciate the time. It's great to talk with you, and we will pick it up again next week.
Yes, sir. This was a fun one. We'll talk next week.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.